Megan Daly, like me, has been a bookworm for as long as she can remember. Whole weekends spent in pyjamas, largely immobile. But Megan now lives out her love of books every day as a teacher librarian, and she also blogs on her website, Children's Books Daily. So she spent years seeing the transformative power of books, and now she's written a book. It's called Raising Readers, How to Nurture a Child's Love of Books. She can tell us how to spark a lifelong love of the written word in your child, whether they're avid or reluctant readers. And in a visual, digital world, how do we keep instilling that love of reading in our children? If you've got tips, head to our Facebook page. Megan Daly, welcome to Life Matters.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's a pleasure. Let's talk about reluctant readers a little bit later. But in general, when should we start reading to our children?
Oh, absolutely. From the minute they are born or even before.
Before?
Yeah. There's lots of research into the benefits of music when a child is in the womb. And it's the same principle with reading. It's about hearing words and the rhythm of language. So, you know, certainly there's evidence that children can hear in the womb. And so reading while you're pregnant aloud is a great way to start. But obviously reading from the second they are born is a wonderful way for a baby to get to know the sound of a parent's voice or a loved adult's voice, and it's just a wonderful experience to start straight up.
It can feel a bit weird reading to a baby when you know that they're not going to pick up the meaning of what you're reading. So does it matter if it's, you know, quantum physics for babies or just the back of the cereal box?
Not at all. I spent a lot of time. I had an e-reader device when my children were born, and I would read aloud the most wildly inappropriate adult books to them. It didn't matter what I was reading. Occasionally I'd read Tim Winton. Occasionally I would be reading a non-fiction book. It was just all about the language that they were hearing and the rhythm of language and the voice. It doesn't matter, of course, what you're reading to them. And in fact, you know, you wouldn't want to be reading them a board book. You know, there's maybe two or three words on the page of a board book. That's not what you want. You don't want stilted language. You want beautiful language.
And some people, I guess, are focused on the idea that if we read to our children, that will help them in their later schooling. It will be a kind of efficient, practical, pragmatic choice. But it sounds like for you, Megan, that it's not just about that, is it? It's about this joy.
Yeah, it is. And look, I've always been very adamant that a parent's role in developing literacy is to imbue a joy and this just sense of wonder around words. So many parents get caught up in flashcards and the magic 100 sight words. You know, my firm belief is that a parent or a carer's role is to really give a child a sense of joy around literature. Books, there is so much research to say that reading increases academic results, and it absolutely does. I've seen it anecdotally, and there's a lot of research out there. But I would also say that reading develops a well-rounded child, and it speaks to the heart and soul of a child. It develops empathy, compassion, kindness. Well, so many things.
And just talking around the office, I was stunned by how many people remembered the picture books that they were read to as children and have taken forward to read to their children. What kinds of books should we look for in a picture book? Is there a way to judge the quality of a picture book?
Yeah, there absolutely is. And when you and I were children, picture books were vastly different to what they are today. So, for example, I loved a picture book as a child called Little Cloud and Mean Mountain by Robert Tallon. I now look at it and I realise it's not actually a great example of a picture book. And a lot of the picture books that we read 20 or 30 years ago, you know, they really aren't. The words are there on the page and the illustrations illustrate exactly what the words are saying. These days, picture books are a very, very complex interplay between text and illustrations, and the illustrations will extend the text. They will often be saying something quite different to the text. So when I'm reading a picture book to my kindy kids at school, I always say, in fact, I sat to the grade six girls as well, I always say, my job is to read the words, your job is to read the pictures, because because, you know, a large proportion of the story is told in the illustrations these days, and there's incredible visual literacy skills which can be mastered by reading really beautiful quality picture books. So in terms of choosing good quality picture books, it's a matter of seeking out things which appeal to you, obviously, and also to your child's interests, but also looking at awards lists and using your local teacher librarian at school and your local libraries and independent bookstores.
Well, and you argue quite strongly in your book that reading the visuals is a really important skill for children to learn growing up in the world we live in today. Why is that?
Because we're surrounded by visuals from the second we're born. One only has to look to the sides of the roads as they're driving to see the amount of visuals that children in the back seat are taking in. And children love looking out the window and they're looking at the billboards. Many children can swipe a device before they can do very much else. We're asking children these days in such a digital environment to take in a lot of visual information. Digital technology has really increased that urgency with which we need to give our children some visual literacy skills, but it is also in the environment around us. We spend a lot of time in schools teaching children how to read words, but we don't always spend an enormous amount of time teaching children how to be critical readers of images. So I think that picture books, well, I know that picture books are one of the very best ways that you can teach visual literacy skills. And there's people like illustrator Tony Flowers, who is doing a PhD in the moment into the visual literacy skills which are embedded in picture books. So picture books are a really important teaching tool for parents and for educators in increasing visual literacy skills in children so that they're critical consumers of images.
And I love just quickly one of the books that you mentioned about reading the visuals, Patrick Ness's take on the Moby Dick story and The Ocean Was Our Sky, illustrated by Ravina Kai. Tell us a little bit about the visuals in that.
Oh, it's just beautiful. I've actually got that book hanging on my wall at home at the moment. It's the most beautiful retelling of Moby Dick I think I've seen. I've got goosebumps talking about it now. It's a very, very dark book. It's got visually, it's got a very limited colour palette of blacks and greys and whites. And then there's these pops of red, which is obviously the massacre of the whale. And it is just, I think I've not seen such an astonishing retelling of Moby Dick as this Patrick Ness, Ravina Kai book. It's definitely one for older readers. And that's something, again, that I would emphasise, that a lot of these picture books these days are not aimed at really young children. I would never give that Patrick Ness book to my kindy kids at school. In fact, I only give it to my grade 5 and 6 students when we're looking at classics and when we're looking at emotion in picture books and when we're looking at particular visual literacy skills. That one's a really fine example of a picture book for older readers, and I usually call those illustrated texts. And of course, things like Cicada by Sean Tan are another example of a text which is aimed at much older readers and even adults. So I know a lot of adults who've really enjoyed the Moby Dick book by Patrick Ness.
Fantastic example too of how the text works with the illustration. Now, Megan, you also have some advice about how books can help children navigate those darker feelings, the darker side of life, and you've experienced that in your own family. Tell us what role books have played for you and your children when it comes to dealing with grief.
Yeah, so my brother passed away 6 years ago and my aunt passed away in 2017, and 6 weeks later my husband passed away. They were all very, very unexpected deaths, very shocking and tragic. And of course, you don't recover from grief. You move through grief and you move with grief, but you don't recover. But I have to say that books have been immensely important to me in our grief journey. They've given me words when I don't have any to say to anybody. Some of the children's books on grief that I have read to my own children and to the students at school have just, given me language and given my own children language to describe how we're feeling. And sometimes authors articulate better how I'm feeling. I've read a lot of adult books on grief, but I've read obviously a lot of children's books on grief as well. And I speak in my book I have a whole chapter on the light and the dark. I think that parents and educators are often fearful of giving children a book which will be upsetting or disturbing for them. But literature is a reflection of life, and life has light and it has dark in it. And I think that children's literature is, you know, has both the light and the dark. And some of the most beautiful books I've ever read have been children's books about grief. And they're not upsetting. They're often very hopeful. There's always hope. There is always hope. And a good children's book author and illustrator allows space for hope and always ends with a sense of hope. But I do think that we are selling our children short if we assume that they will only want to read things which are happy, because children navigate the world through literature or through watching television. But I think that literature is a really good way to think about some of those big issues in life, like death or like wars that are happening overseas or refugees. All of those big literature, big themes that are explored in children's literature are done sensitively and are age appropriate and are beautiful.
We're talking to Megan Daly. She's a teacher librarian, a book blogger, and now an author herself. Her book's called Raising Readers, and it's full of ideas for basically making your child addicted to books for the rest of their lives. Megan, what about when we revisit the books that we loved as children and realise that maybe they've aged badly in some cases, perhaps, you know, the way they represent girls or people from non-Anglo backgrounds? Should we avoid giving those books to our children, or can we let them enjoy them, but also contextualise them for a modern world?
Yeah, look, that's such an issue. It's often quite shocking to us as adults to reread books that we adored in our childhood and go, oh gosh, there's some themes in there which we just wouldn't put in a children's book these days, whether that be about racial diversity or the role of women in the house is often a big one. For myself, it was probably Peter Rabbit and Mae Gibbs. I adored those books as a young child. Absolutely adored them, and I was so excited to purchase those for my babies. Well, you know, I'm just reading Mae Gibbs at the moment with my 7-year-old, and it is quite violent. I've discovered the Banksia men are terribly scary.
I still have nightmares about the Banksia men. They're awful.
They're awful. I actually used to run past Banksia trees lest one of them grab me. Aww. I mean, they're dreadful things. But, you know, I think that, you know, they were written at a time, and I say that to my children when I read them, and I do sometimes edit little bits of it. But also you have to just look at the context in which they are written. I think they can be a really good teaching tool in the way attitudes have changed towards women or diversity or all sorts of things, or even the representation of violence. So you just need to look at them in context. They are still valid texts, obviously. They're classics for a reason. They've stood the test of time. The language is often a little bit inaccessible for children of today who are used to a more casual style. But again, I think reading the classics is a great way to increase vocab. And there can be some incredibly tricky words in the classics which need to be really pulled apart and analysed, and that can be a great way to increase vocab also.
So, Megan, what if you've done all these things? You've read to your child since they were in utero. You've got shelves just brimming over with good picture books, and you show them that you love reading yourself. But even so, your child just doesn't seem to like reading. When should you start to worry? When should you label them as a reluctant reader?
Yeah, look, I'm always disappointed when a child is labelled a reluctant reader, because I think that every single child, no matter whether they are a reluctant reader or they are a child who struggles with literacy issues, I think that every single child deserves an identity as a reader. So obviously, as soon as a educator flags with you that there might be some concerns around literacy issues, or that they notice that your child is a reluctant reader, or you notice that your child is a reluctant reader, I think the first thing you need to do is look at if there is any diagnosable literacy issues, seeing a specialist in the area, whether that be an occupational optometrist or a pediatrician, is a really good place to start. If there are no diagnosed literacy issues, And then we have what we call, yes, maybe a reluctant reader, although I'm not a huge fan of that term. I think that every child has the ability to access story. So if you've got a reluctant reader, it's really important to not give up on them and to not say things out loud to them or in earshot of them like, oh, they're just more into sport. Nah, books aren't really their thing. We live in an age where they will be required to have a really quite high level of literacy. Even looking at senior maths, there's an incredible amount of literacy which needs to be used to access maths problems these days in exam situations. So it's really important, I'd say a few things about encouraging a reluctant reader. It's important that parents, caregivers, and educators model reading. It's important that you continue to make reading really fun, that you don't make it a chore, that you don't make it something that becomes a real burden on a child, that you seek out authors and you meet them in real life. There's people out there like Tristan Banks and Oliver Pomervan, great Australian authors who, you know, Jackie Harvey, who absolutely inspire kids to read. Meeting an author in real life can be like meeting a rock star.
I was really surprised to read that in your book, Megan, because yeah. I just assumed that kids would get immersed in the world of the text and not be so fussed about where it came from.
No, not at all, particularly with tweens and teens who are accessing social media. Authors these days are far more accessible. So a lot of authors have fabulous social media accounts, or young children can email their favourite author. You know, my seven-year-old met one of her idols on Sunday night, Megan McDonald, who wrote the Judy Moody books, and she just sat there starstruck for about 2 hours while we had dinner with her. You know, that to her was better than meeting, well, I met Tim Minchin recently, and that was very exciting for me. Authors can take on rock stars. Qualities. And we have so many literature festivals in Australia aimed at children. Schools are really good at getting authors in and having them speak to children, and independent bookstores often have authors in. Reluctant readers meeting an author can be a really great way to get into story. I'd also say that I think audio stories are really key in when you've got a reluctant reader, because sometimes they're reluctant because reading's still a bit tricky for them. You know, reading can take a long time to develop, and everybody develops at a different rate. So audio stories are a way to access story without having to labour over words.
And I love the story you tell, Megan, in the book about some of the people who've struggled with reading and just worked so hard with their families to get there. They're wonderful success stories. Megan, thanks so much for chatting with us about how to spark that joy of reading in everybody today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Megan Daly is a teacher librarian. She runs a website called Children's Books Daily, and she's the author of Raising Readers, How to Nurture a Child's Love of Books. She's also raising some child readers herself. Unsurprisingly, she thinks sleep is overrated.